You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome to the second hour of the Civic Media Spotlight. We go back to Daybreak with Jamie and Brian. They talk to Jeff Mangan, the founder and president of the Transparent Election Initiative. He tells them about how they are looking to prohibit corporations from donating to campaigns in Montana.
It's 8:35 right now. We appreciate you joining us this morning. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. You remember 2025. Well, that's when Wisconsin witnessed the most expensive state Supreme Court race ever. That renewed concerns of a lot of people over corporate and dark money's influence on state elections. Well, Montana is attempting to change how corporate and dark money are funneled into those elections. And to tell us about that and whether maybe could this proposal work in Wisconsin, Jeff Mangan is with us. He's the founder and president of Transparent Election Initiative. TransparentElection.org is their website. Jeff, thanks for being here this morning. So for those of us who just recently heard about the Montana proposal, what is it and how did this come about?
Certainly. First of all, thanks, Brian. Thanks, Jamie, for the invite. Appreciate it. We love talking about the Montana plan, not only in Montana, but across the country now. We love to inspire folks, and I appreciate you reaching out and having us on your show. The Montana plan is simply taking a look at the way states give power to when a business wants to incorporate in a state right now, the state issues a corporate charter that basically gives them all general powers. And the courts have said all general powers means the same powers as basically a human being. So all of the regulations that states have put on over the last 150 years, because it's been about 150 years since anyone really took a look at how charter corporations, we've been regulating on that general power theory. So all the regulations have been on general powers. But I'll dive into that in a second. But how this came about, I was Montana's Commissioner of Political Practices from 2017 to 2023. In Montana, we have basically one commissioner of political practices, a small little office of three staff that's responsible for the entire state's campaign finance, disclosure, transparency, all local and state elections, plus state employee ethics, plus all the lobbying that's done at the legislative level. So small little office, lots of work, never enough money, never enough time to actually dig into things. So that's when I really was introduced to what Citizens United has done in small states like Montana, small population states, and others. And as part of that, I had wonderful colleagues from across the state that I got to know. And one of those individuals was Commissioner Weintraub with the FEC. We became good friends. Her chief of staff, chief legal at the time, a gentleman by the name of Tom Moore, and Tom and I and Ellen, we remained friends for the since 2017, exchange cards, those type of things. But in 2024, Tom reached out to me and said, "Jeff, I've got this mechanism that can undo Citizens United. I wrote a white paper. Would you take a look at it?" I said, "Sure." It was like Friday night. He's on the East Coast. 7 o'clock, sent it over, 30 pages, read it, called him up, forgot that I was two time zones away, woke him up and said, "Tom, we're doing this in Montana." And that's literally how it started. Tom's research into the mechanism on which we'll talk about in a second, and my desire to put this in front of Montana citizens and now hopefully citizens across the country to say this is a real way to actually undo Citizens United. After all this last 16 years, we've kind of thrown up our hands and said, "Oh, Supreme Court's ruled, Corporations are people. They have these free speech rights. We can't do anything. And we're here to tell you, we actually do have the power to do that. We just kind of forgot about that ability. So that's how it came about.
So let's talk about that. What, I mean, and that's where the nuance is going to be. What is our ability to basically overturn Citizens United? They say that corporations have First Amendment rights to spend independently in elections. Is this some sort of state level workaround? Are you directly trying to challenge the precedent that's been set? Explain that to us, if you would.
Nope. Actually, Citizens United is just, one of the reasons we're doing this. It actually, when the Montana plan is enacted, it goes, it doesn't overturn Citizens United. It basically makes it moot. It doesn't matter in the state of Montana because it won't apply to our corporations. So we're not undoing that. We're looking at it a totally different way. We've always looked at particularly Citizens United and regulations in campaign finance. Through that lens of the First Amendment. We haven't looked at how corporations are actually authorized to do business in the state in the first place. So we move from the First Amendment. I want everybody to move from the First Amendment and just move over to the 10th Amendment. States create their own corporations. It's not a federal government. There's no federal regulations that come down. Each state creates its own corporations. And like I said, for the last 150 years, all states have basically given their corporations, all corporations, general authority to do business in their state, these general powers. That's what we've been regulating on ever since. So if we, Citizens United was basically the underlying portion of that was a regulation on a power that the state of Virginia had already given the nonprofit Citizens United. And they said that was illegal because they have these, you give them all the general powers and they have the same powers as you and I. So we're taking one step further, going back to what the state can do when they charter a corporation in the first place. And it's simple, is they'll have all these other powers, limited liability, the ability to own property, the ability to hire and fire employees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of those same powers with the exception of one. And that power is the power to spend in politics. They don't have the power. The right doesn't apply. So it really is that simple. And it's not something new. And before all the states gave all these general powers to corporations, before that, states would enact very specific charters to corporations. You could only be a railroad. You could only be a railroad for 10 years. You can only own property within certain, whatever it might be. They would give very specific powers to corporations, and that's all that they could do. But as states, we've got more and more states. States begin to compete to have businesses incorporated in their state. New Jersey was one of the first and said, oh, if you come incorporate in our state, you'll have all the general powers of everyone else. All general powers, and every other state decided to follow that realm. But they never gave up the power to go back and change those initial powers in the first place. We just haven't thought about doing it. So it's a really unique way of looking at it. 10th Amendment, corporate law has nothing to do with the First Amendment. It's how every business works anyway. They rely on the powers that the state gives them. They're going to have to undo, if this is successful, and we think it will be, and of course will be litigated and all the way to the Supreme Court. But if they strictly look at corporate law in the 10th Amendment, if they don't follow what we're doing, they're going to be throwing out precedent after precedent after precedent, and just it would just put businesses in a tailspin because not only affect elections, but it would affect, insurance and banking and financial things and, work with the shareholders, et cetera, if they want to carve out this little exception for, states can't, they have the power to do all these other things and tell the corporation all these other things, but they can't do that. So it would be really interesting.
Jeff Mangan is the founder and president of Transparent Election Initiative. You can go to transparentelection.org to get all the information. And I guess that's why, there's people who still had questions about, like, why do all these companies incorporate in Delaware? And you answered that because every state is doing it differently. In Montana in particular, what roadblocks are in front of trying to get this plan passed? because it seems to make sense.
Corporations.
Yes, well, that's true.
Corporations, the political industrial establishment, everyone has gotten used to working under Citizens United for the past 16 years. Kind of forgot about these things used to be a lot different before 2010, really. And right. in the way people not only campaigned for office or raised money or worked with corporations and others. And the beauty of the Montana plan, the beauty of it to me and to citizens is it affects everybody the same. There's no carve out for good C4s or bad C4s, friends of a political side or not friends of a political side. And that's kind of where the, that opponent goes is, well, they want it to affect the way the other people spend money and work, but they don't want it to affect themselves. So when I say it affects everybody, it affects for-profit corporations, C-corps, S-corps, LLCs, it affects nonprofits, C-3s, which shouldn't be spending in elections in the first place, true. C-4s, unions, associations. Wow. And that's, and when people start, well, unions, C-4, they have a really good C-4. We've been, it's like, well, if you want to make this work, you got to rip the Band-Aid off and make it work. So you're either for dark money or you're not. You're either against dark money or you're not. So C4s have been that conduit for all of this dark money since Citizens United. So a C4, and they're very good C4s, social welfare organizations, a lot of them doing a lot of good work. And I like to tell folks when I talk about this is, guess what they get to do after the Montana plan? They get to be really damn good social welfare organizations.
Still get to do your work.
And doing all the good work that they wanted to do. They just won't be able to write a check from their general fund to support or oppose a candidate or an issue. And that's kind of where the rub is. Well, that's, where the rub is, particularly with some of the larger ones that have become this machine for moving money through. So, a C4, a person gives a lot of money to a C4 to remain anonymous because they don't have to identify their donors. The C4 writes a check to a political action committee. The political action committee then discloses, like it should, where they got that contribution from, and they disclose that it's the C4. But no one ever knows about those underlying donors. So we're going to take that away. So, and if you want to raise money, still support issues, create a PAC. Mm-hmm. Only accept contributions. You could only accept in Montana, only accept contributions from individuals, disclose all of that. Same thing,
Jeff, we got it. We're short on time, but I wanted to know, how is this playing in Montana? How are the voters taking this? Are they for it, against it? Where do they fall?
People love it. And all you have to do, and I'm sure you know this too, and I usually start off every conversation I have with somebody, doesn't matter what political persuasion they are, just ask them the question, do you think there's too much money in politics? And every single one of them say, yes, there is. Perfect. Then we've got agreement. We can start talking about what a potential solution is. So people love it. They see probably the same thing we were talking about right before the show started, Jamie. They see all this money flooding in. They don't know who's paying for the messaging. They can't make an informed decision on a candidate or an issue because there's just so darn much of it. They don't know who to trust. And if we think back, it's only been 16 years. Before that, things were a little bit different. Candidates folks were talking about issues. They come to your door. They talk to you. You could go out and see them. You could ask those questions. You could take a look at their mailer and find out it came from the campaign, yada, yada, yada. And you didn't have to worry about all of this money flooding. Yeah. And it's just gotten, every day I get an email. An email.
Jeff,
set up.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, but thanks for being here. Jeff Mangan,
founder
and president of TransparentElection.org. We will be back with more on,
one more. Civic Media Network. Daybreak.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:52 right now. We hope that your morning is going well so far. Thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Network. This is Daybreak. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And I heard a little have it your way coming in. That's because How many times have you thought to yourself, well, I've had a fast food experience and maybe I'm happy about it, maybe I'm not. I wish I could talk to somebody in charge. Well, we know we can't call the clown and talk to Ronald McDonald. We know we can't. We can. The head of Culver's is always on his commercials, but I'm betting he's not taking our calls.
Yeah.
Burger King, you're not going to get the creepy. You're not going to get the creepy king, but you're going to get just as close because Burger King is. We talk about transparency all the time. Burger King is ready to be transparent.
Yes.
They're giving customers direct access to its president, Tom Curtis. They publicly shared his phone number for feedback. This couldn't possibly go wrong.
Should we call him right now?
I feel like we need to call this because here's the thing. Is this actually his number or did they come up with some sort of line? Yeah, are you calling? Call this number.
I'm thinking about it.
Call it. Call the number. We'll keep talking.
I'm not
going to
give the number out now because it'll get a busy signal.
No.
But you can call this number. You can share your experience, suggestions, or complaints directly with company leadership. Now, I full disclosure, one, I am not paid by Burger King, but two, I love Burger King. The Whopper beats any other fast food burger. And I know I'm a huge fan of Culver's. That doesn't throw shade at Culver's, but I love a Whopper.
Do you know what I used to love at Burger King that they got rid of? And I was so sad. It basically...
The original chicken sandwich?
The chicken Whopper that they had. That kept me fed through both pregnancies.
Really?
I was like, I craved very few things when I was pregnant with both of my boys. Chicken Whoppers with a frozen Coke? Oh, that was my go-to. Every single time Corey would say to me, should we go get something to eat? Like, here I am, this pregnant woman on bed rest. It took a village to get me into the car. And I'd be like, we'd get me in the back seat. My feet would be up. And he'd be like, where do you want to go eat? And I'd be like, I just want a chicken Whopper. That's all that I ever wanted. I didn't want anything else. It kept me fed and happy while I was pregnant with both of my boys. And those pregnancies were miserable. So I was happy to have one thing.
I can't remember. Was that a deep fried patty or a grilled patty?
No, it was just a grilled patty. But it had all of the same toppings as the Whopper. So it was delicious. And I felt better because it was chicken. So as I'm pounding this thing down, I was like, oh, it's not as many calories. It's fine.
Actually, a Whopper, surprisingly, not that many because it's a regular hamburger.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you could call. And
how's it going in there? Did you get through?
It goes straight to a voicemail. It says they're getting a lot of calls. But it has a lovely message saying that they're listening to everything and they will get back to you if you leave a message.
Nobody's getting back to me. Let's be real.
Hey, he sounded very sincere.
Well, of course he did.
And it was the man himself.
Can we actually call it? Put the voicemail on the air?
I can call it again.
Let's do that. I want to put the voicemail on the air so people know what they're going to get. The move, though, of giving out Tom Curtis's phone number or this phone number that Parker is so diligently working on over there is tied to Burger King's longtime slogan, Have It Your Way, where they emphasize that customers help shape the brand's direction. Mm-hmm. And according to Burger King, guest feedback has already influenced menu innovations. Here we go. Right, dialing.
It's exciting.
I'm at Burger King. Really appreciate you calling to share your thoughts on your BK experience or just on BK in general.
Okay.
Your feedback is really important to me, and we have tons of calls coming in right now, which is awesome. But it also means that I can't return every single call. But I will tell you this. We are looking at every single one, every single text, and listening to every single voicemail. So record your message after the beep, or you can text me at this number, and we're going to get back to you as soon as possible. Thanks again, and have a great day. Bye now.
Hi, Tom. My name is Jamie Martinson. I'm a host of a radio show in Wisconsin. It's called Daybreak on the Civic Media Network. We were talking about this ingenious marketing plan that you have, and we just wanted to show our listeners that it was real. My co-host Brian Noonan is here. We are Burger King fans, and thank you so much for being open to your customers. That's all we really had to say today.
And I have only one piece of two pieces. One, I'm a huge fan of the Whopper, always a fan. The Royal Crispy Wraps, Tom, a little smaller tortilla, because I understand the amount of chicken that can go into a Royal Crispy Wrap. Maybe make the tortilla a little smaller so the chicken seems more prevalent. That would be my only piece of feedback. They're tasty the way they are, but a little less tortilla.
All right, bring back the chicken whopper, too. Well, thank you very
much. What's our hotline number for time to call us back?
Our hotline number is 1-855-752-4842. So if you get this and you want to talk, we'd love to talk to you. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks,
Tom. Have a great day.
Have it your way, buddy.
I mean, that was easy. There you go. Yeah. If you have to lodge a complaint, there you have it. But back to what we were saying.
Or just constructive criticism.
Right.
Just a little constructive criticism.
Burger King says that that type of feedback has already influenced some menu innovations, including the $1 million Whopper contest. Ooh.
People got to design their own Whopper.
I love that. Some restaurant modernization efforts and operational improvements as well. So, if this is what it is, there you go.
One big misstep. Remember when they did that? It was a Halloween Whopper with the black bun that they used.
That was weird.
Squid ink or whatever in the bun. Yeah,
no, that was weird. They do go out on a limb for like special holidays a lot. And I get it. It's promotional.
Shoot
it's
your
advertising.
Shot, Burger King.
I get it.
Shoot your shot.
Curtis says that he's looking forward to live, open, and honest conversations by getting these calls to better understand guest experiences. And really, I mean, in the fast food industry, this is pretty rare to be able to call a number, whether it's legit or not. And by the way, that number, in case, you know, you're a Burger King connoisseur.
Oh, yes, now you can give it out.
Yeah, now we can give it out. If you're a Burger King connoisseur, 305-874-0520, 305-874-0520. If you have a beef, a compliment, or some constructive criticism for the president of Burger King.
I grew up two blocks from a Burger King, one of the originals where you could still walk in and see the flame broiler in the back.
Right.
And as a kid, that was the coolest thing, watching the burgers
get flamed
and they just dropped into the burger pit.
I just liked the crowns. I thought I was a princess.
I love the crowns, too. We still think you're a princess,
Thank
Jamie.
Thank you.
And you
Thank
prove
you.
It every morning here on Daybreak. Yes, Parker, we see it's time to go. So thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of the show. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson on this.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go back to Nightlight with Pete and Greg. The boys speak with Mike Clemens, a sports reporter talking about all things Packers and sports.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach. And Dom is spinning the tunes. And on the phone, we are having a ball here with our guest, Civic Media Sports Authority, Mike Clemens, always a favorite here at Nightlight. Mike, so what can you tell us? What happens? I know everybody's still getting there. How does the combine play out for you as a reporter over the next day or two?
Well, first, they bring in the general managers and the head coaches for 2 days of press conferences and interviews. And then once they, you know, catch up with what's going on media-wise, what's going on with the teams, then, the stars are the players. And today it was the defensive linemen, then it'll be quarterbacks and wide receivers and defensive backs and, you know, a different position group like that every day. And it's kind of like a car wash. You come in as a 22-year-old player coming out of college, and you do your physical, you do some testings, you go through interviews. You might have, if you're a good player, you might have to as many as a dozen or more interviews with different teams every day. And then you do the workout that you see on the NFL Network at night, which they're just doing some of the first ones right now over at Lucas Oil Stadium. I'm just outside the convention center. And, you know, you got to run the shuttles, the times. You know, if you're a quarterback and receiver, you throw and pass catches. But, you know, this is part of your audition to get in to the NFL, and it's the measurables that all the scouts want to do. They're taking down the times and marking this, and they'll put that into analytics. So the other thing is, you know, the Green Bay Packers. A year ago this time, I got, this used to be just for, like, the top newspaper writers. I guess I've been doing this long enough or built up a relationship, you know, for our civic media stations where they let me in a couple of years ago. And so it's kind of off the record, but we sit around the table for about an hour with some coffee and croissants with Brian Gutekunst, the GM, and he gives you some backstories for stuff and things that maybe they don't want out there that the other teams to find out, but a lot of it makes sense. And then there's other times where he's just going to, you know, hold his cards close to his chest. But one of the things that we talked to him about in a little press conference, this part was on the record, was, you know, he's getting into free agency. Would you bring back Romeo Doubs, who's going to be, you know, at the end of his rookie contract? You know, he had that little weird situation 2 years ago where they were going to go to Los Angeles and play the Rams. He's from L.A., and I don't know if he got upset about the game plan or whatever. He was AWOL, and the teammates were concerned. I mean, they went over to his house to check on him, and he's sitting in there playing video games, mad about something.
Oh,
and so instead of playing in front of his family and friends in L.A., they benched him. I mean, they suspended him for that game, and he sat, back in Green Bay thinking about it and then had to make amends for that. Well, he's been a dependable possession receiver, but remember last year, what did they do with the first-round pick? They took Matthew Golden, right, who didn't have maybe the best rookie season. It wasn't like a Justin Jefferson out of Vikings 3 or 4 years ago. He had some injuries as well. So we asked Goody, how did you think Romeo Doubs will be back in free agency with a re-signing? And how did you think that Matthew Golden did in his rookie season?
Yeah, I thought Matthew did a great job. But with all the opportunities that we gave him, I thought he did an excellent job. Would have loved to seen him get more opportunities through the year. It didn't work out that way. But when he did, he performed, and he performed at a high level. And really excited to see where he goes in year two. Obviously, he was a third-year player coming out of college, 1 year at Texas, 2 years at Houston. So I think his ceiling is very, very high. We're very, very excited about what he's going to do for our football team moving forward.
Speaking about the wide receiver room, losing a guy like Romeo Doubs into free agency, how do you expect to attack that through the draft and forward?
Yeah, we haven't lost anybody yet, right? We're still kind of going through that process. But Romeo's done a fantastic job for us over his 4 years with the Green Bay Packers. Very consistent. His work ethic is second to none. Again, we'd love to have him back. And if we do, he'll be a bit important part of our football team. And if we don't, I'm sure he'll be very successful wherever he goes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I heard a couple of words in past tense there. Did you?
Yeah, jumping the gun.
Yeah. So I speak fluent Goody. You know what I'm saying?
You are our Goody whisperer.
Yeah. Exactly, Greg.
That's awesome.
I know it's very early to, they're at the combine right now. They're doing the thing. They're talking to possible new players. And with regard to the Packers, and this is just trying to get your opinion, Mike, really, because we're just out of the NFL season. Super Bowl was a couple of weeks ago. The Packers season last year was inconsistent, I would say, at best. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't great. But what do you see going into, what do you see the moves being made to ramp it up a little bit coming up for this new season as far as tightening up some plays, getting players on board? I know there's injuries that need to be overcome, but what do you see them doing for the 2026 season?
So a year ago at this time, Greg, we're here in downtown Indianapolis in the team hotel in the conference room, and we're saying to Goody, hey, you got close. I mean, you lost 22-10 to the Eagles, who went out and just blew up the Chiefs. They beat them 34-0 at halftime and went on to win the Super Bowl. So maybe you're just one game away, right? And he goes, yeah, but we lost our last three, so we're going to have to work on that. So coming into the summer, people are saying, ooh, Packers, this could be it. This could be the next step. This could be one of the top two or three teams that you could consider that's going to make it to the Super Bowl. And then they pull out that incredible trade for Micah Parsons with the Dallas Cowboys. And then they win those first two games against the Lions and the Commanders and they're like, holy, wow, look how great this team is. And then they lose to the Cleveland Browns. And then they have some injuries. And then they lose that game to Denver, where Micah Parsons goes down for the rest of the season with a torn ACL. Christian Watson has to go to the hospital to have his rib cage checked out. I was in that locker room, and I talked to Gutekunst about this, and I said, Brian, that team was distraught. I think, we just lost to Sean Payton, veteran coach, Bo Nix, young quarterback, and a Broncos team that, even though you guys were beating them by 9 points, they came back and they outcoached you, out-techniqued you, outplayed you, and won that game. And he said, yeah, he realized that. And then they lost the next five, including to the Bears, right? So he knows that he's got to figure that out. Like, if a player or two like that go down, who's going to step up? Can Jordan Love take it to the next level? Can Xavier McKinney, the all-pro safety, can he come up with an interception or something to change the momentum in these games? Because they couldn't at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Mike Clemens is our guest. He is the Civic Media Sports Authority. Love having him on Nightlight. We're talking NFL Combine right now. Mike, speak a little bit, if you will, to the loss of Jeff Hafley. That's a big loss. The Packers were a top five defense the last couple of years. They've got great players. How will that loss be absolved by the Packers? And I know they've got a new guy in place, but that's got to hurt a little bit.
Pete, it started with the loss of John Eric Sullivan. John Eric has been Brian Gutekunst's right-hand man for years. You know, he's been with the organization almost 20 years. He tried for some GM jobs last year, came up second for the one in the Jacksonville Jaguars. So today he was talking about, he gets hired as the Miami Dolphins coach. And then we're talking to Jeff Hafley, defensive coordinator, who, you know, we had a pretty good relationship with in his 2 years in Green Bay. And he says, yeah, you know, John Eric and I have been talking about this moment for the last 2 years. Like, huh? What? You know, and yeah, I mean, John Eric said for 2 years, he's been saying, Hafley, I like you. And they made it clear. I was talking to one of the guys in the hallway. He said, it's not like they were friends. It's not like they were going over each other's house. But during those 2 years in Green Bay, they thought, John Eric said, if I get a GM job, what would the structure look like? What would make you comfortable? How do you think that we could take stuff from Green Bay, we could adjust, you know, to our own? And they talked about that, and Hafley had a half dozen interviews because of his popularity as the Packers' defensive coordinator the last 2 years, which, by the way, he gave up 25 points in the fourth quarter in the last game of the year against the Chicago Bears.
Right, yeah, right.
And, yeah, yep.
And still had a half dozen interviews, but he gravitated toward the Dolphins because the owners made some assurances, and the guy that was his, you know, immediate partner, his general manager, he just worked with for the last 2 years in Green Bay. So that's how that gets started. And then Hafley takes a half dozen of his coaches. So there's a new defensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon, from the Cardinals. He got fired as head coach, but Cardinals are a dysfunctional franchise. He was part of a Eagles defense that got them to the Super Bowl. And so so they're hiring new coaches. They still haven't hired a new special teams coach. But I got to play you guys the clip of the week. I'm already calling this the quote of the week from the Combine, which is usually filled with rumors and everything. So you lose to the Bears, right? Do you remember when they – and I told you guys, Ben Johnson was the real deal. And a year ago when people were getting all over Caleb Williams, I said, no, this kid's got it. He needs an offensive line. He's got some Favre-like skills. So Ben Johnson gets hired, and at his opening press conference, he says, yeah, and I enjoyed beating the Packers twice a year when I was with the Lions. Right? Everybody said, ooh. And then when the Bears and the Packers played this past season, remember those drive-by handshakes at the end of the game between
him
and Matt LaFleur? So Ben Johnson, your Chicago Bears coach, was on with NBC Sports here at the Combine, and here's how that went down.
What is the deal with the Packers?
Who likes the Packers?
How much of that is leaning fully into your job as Bears coach, and how much of it is how you truly feel?
Yeah, I mean, the Bears and the Packers, they should not like each other. I think it's as simple as that. I think that's going to make this rivalry, this game, something that people are going to watch here going forward.
Have you talked to Matt LaFleur at all?
No, no, we don't talk.
Okay. Do you want it that way?
I'm good with it.
Has he tried to reach out to you?
No.
Would they date?
Oh, my God. I got to tell you, as a Bear fan, that made me so nervous. When he said that at that press conference, and I live half my life in Wisconsin and love Wisconsin, but I'm a Bear fan, I'm like, oh, I don't need this tension, Mike.
No. And
it sounds like the old school wrestlers.
Yeah.
I mean, well, that's exactly it, Greg. It's pro wrestling promotion. You know, they're having some fun. And you know what, though? LaFleur doesn't want to play this game. LaFleur has figured out the way that you survive in the NFL, like Sean McDermott, who finally got his walking papers, is, I don't want to be the story. The players are the story. I don't want to say something that gets into people's craw, and they play it on a loop over and over again. And the next thing you know, fan dissension builds, and it can turn quickly in this business, and you're going to be out of a job. So that's the way LaFleur is going to play it, and I don't think he's going to take the bait on it.
My dad would call that being classy in the press. He loved it when athletes said less.
Yeah, right. But apparently that's not the way that this Ben Johnson wants to play down there in Chicago. And I'm sure that's true. No. The McCaskey family, the owners, and most importantly, the Chicago Bears fans, who, I'll tell you what, 4 or 5 years ago, I'd be covering a Bears-Packers game down at Soldier Field. There might be 3 or 4 of those guys with those cheese grater hats, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the opposite of the, There must have been 1,000 of that last Packers-Bears game.
Yeah.
I was in Chicago then. It was insane. And I just, to me, I just, I look, he's delivering, but he can't, I'm not saying he got lucky either. He's a great coach. But as a fan, it just makes me really nervous. Because the more your coach is running his trap, the farther you have to fall. And I live in Packer country, Mike.
Oh, and hey, listen, I kind of love it. I mean, you know, Ben Johnson said, hey, I don't care about bulletin board material. Bring it. So we'll see how the Packers respond.
Absolutely. Mike, as always, my friend, thanks so much. Enjoy the heck out of Indianapolis.
You bet. I got to cross the street there. It's like playing a game of Frogger. You know what I'm saying?
Be careful, buddy. All right.
Thank you, boys.
Thank you. Thanks. We're coming right back for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Greg is busy playing the drums, so I will say welcome back to Nightlight, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, that was my turn. Oh, sorry.
I think it was. You look good, though, dude. You were really jamming.
I am an air drum enthusiast. I can, but you put sticks in my hands and put me in front of things that resemble a drum, I will be the most embarrassing person in your world. But air drumming, I'm amazing at.
Oh, that was beautiful, man. You were crushing it. You were so good at the air drums, I thought, yeah, he can actually play the drums. Whereas when I do it, it's just nonsense, you know.
Yeah.
Thanks for everything tonight, folks. We thank you to Mike Clemens, Martine Alvarado, and Tom Tran. Thank you for all your calls and texts. Speaking of texts, we've got to get through a few. We'll do our best here. We got an avalanche here. Nick from Marshall in the 608 says, hard to pick just one. I choose David Letterman, Conan O'Brien, and Jimmy Kimmel. Hard to argue with any of those, Greg.
I mean, Jimmy Kimmel, who... Okay, when they announced that Kimmel was getting his own late night show, which, by the way, back in the day was live at midnight. That was the old model. And it was post The Man Show, and everyone sort of had this thing of, what? But that was the same attitude people had towards Conan, too. And Kimmel has, I don't think Kimmel's the greatest interviewer. I think he's kind of weird, but I think that's part of his charm. But who he has become over the past 20 years has been nothing short of amazing. I watch his monologue every single morning when I catch up on that stuff on YouTube. I always watch his monologue because it's always so good, and he's so pointed and so opinionated, and it's still always wrapped in the silliest and sometimes I would say sophomore humor, which I am here for. But I love Kimmel. Love Kimmel.
Dude, I do too, and I will say that like he is the closest maybe to Carson, just in the sense that he's so calm. Carson was very, Letterman was acerbic, and I love, Letterman's my favorite, but Conan's kind of jumpy. Leno, I couldn't even stand watching him. I love him as a comedian, had trouble with him as a host, but I think Kimmel is close to Carson. Speaking of Carson, Cindy in the 920 says Johnny Carson. Anna from Madison in the 608 says, hi, Pete and Greg. My favorite late-night talk show host is Johnny Carson. He had great guests and was very funny. When I was in high school, I remember staying up late to watch The Wedding of Tiny Tim and Miss Vicky. She says, I like the new show. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you very much. Peter in New London, listening on WISS, says, Conan was always was my favorite. I still crack up thinking about some of the little skits he had done, like the staring contest with Andy, and of course, the bear that had self fun. I'm not saying that word on the air. I still love, and the year 2000. If you don't know what that is, YouTube Conan the year 2000. It was a bit they did before, and actually a little bit after the year 2000, where they would do predictions. But that's all I'm going to tell you, because it's some of the most... That's the thing I love about Conan, too, that show, is there are so many examples of great like recurring sketches that would happen. And the year 2000 is one I reference regularly.
That's a great one. And if I had to do that for Letterman, I would say the Rupert sketches where he's telling Rupert what to do.
Yeah.
Pretend you're a waiter and stick your thumb in someone's water. And like, just he's cracking up half the time, too. It's so funny.
And that's the thing about Letterman that was, I don't want to say disappointing, but his show, at least the Late Show, his NBC and the early iteration of the Late Show on CBS, but more the NBC Late Show or Late Night, had much more silly sketches, skits, wacky and like almost avant-garde type of things happening. And then when he moved to CBS, it became more of the cookie cutter. But when you watch those old NBC bits he does, which is what I love about him, and Carson did the same thing, and Conan does it too. An amazing library on YouTube to go back on and look at all of these amazing interviews. I mean, the David Letterman interview he did with Harvey Pekar, the artist on the NBC, where they get into a literal shouting match at each other. It's so good. Yeah, I love it. I love late night television.
Let's try to get through some more of these social media responses because this question crushed today in social media. Boris Hamilton says, Carson, Letterman, Cavett. Great, Boris. Thank you. Sam Wargula from Radio for Pets. Greg, we got to have them on sometime. Great punk band. Sam says, Letterman, Carson, Ferguson, Conan. I love how people are ranking them. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Ferguson, Craig. Oh God. Let's talk about Craig Ferguson one of these days. Let's try to get him on the show, could we? I'd love that.
What's he doing now? Absolutely.
He does stand-up. He does stand-up. I mean, he does. He has. Oh, he has a podcast. Everyone has a podcast. But this he has a podcast.
Yeah, this is the perfect forum for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ellen Martin says, I honestly would include Charlie Rose in a top list, despite things that got him canceled culturally. Dick Lesperance says, Carson, no one even close except Letterman. Scott Liebrin says, Dick Lesperance, I agree. Brenda Bell, I second this. He had two vouchers, Greg, on the social media. Did Dick. Whoa. Yeah. Our pal Mike Desitel says, Carson and Letterman, each was true to themselves. The guests and the audience always came first. I never sensed an agenda, and their comedy was sharp and quick. Both men were big enough not to only make the audience laugh with them, but also at them. Great text. Daniel Wheeler says, Conan O'Brien. Love it, Daniel. J.B. Thompson, guy behind the guy, says, tough question to answer. Who wrote most of their own material, and who had a battery of writers? I think they all had a battery of writers.
No, they all had writers. I think Craig Ferguson's the only one who had a small room because he would improv a lot of his stuff on stage.
Yeah.
And he's a guy who really, like, at one point stopped caring about being a late night host and just wanted to have a good show. And he had Bishop Desmond Tutu on his show one time.
Right. Oh, right. That's right.
Yeah. I wish there was more of a library of his old shows. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Notice that no one's saying James Corden, though.
No one is saying James Corden. Rich Tellerico from Key and Peele. Love it. Says,
Rich.
Carson, Conan, Letterman, Leno. All right.
Carson, Conan.
That's not a bad lineup. Our buddy Tony Zimmerman says, I consider anything after 5 late night, so I'm going with Pete. Oh, well, thank you.
Excuse me.
That's left over from a couple weeks ago, and I did compliment his baby on the meeting earlier, so he probably just gave me the nod there. Patrick Mine says, Space Ghost, Sean Boyce, Letterman, or Chevy? Oh. That has to be a joke, right?
Come on! What a way to end the show today. Yeah, oh, my goodness. All right, folks, we got to get out of here, so I'm going to thank Tucker. I'm thanking on behalf of Pete. So we're going to thank Tucker. We're going to thank Dominic. We're going to thank engineering, traffic. All you guys make the things work. Everyone who texted, called, came on the show. Without you, there's no us. Stick around for more Civic Media. Catch us tomorrow. We have a great show. We're going to be talking to Wisconsin Public Radio as well as popcorn picks. All right, we got to get out of here. Talk to you later. Civic Media, take care. Good night.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.